There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the deal we got? I mean, the deal we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
And here we go, FM Talk 106.5 at Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along. Live local talk on this Friday. And we've taken the show on the road, hanging out with our friends at Mobile Bay Coins. We'll talk with them about, number one, just the great opportunities to get those Christmas shopping items purchased right now, the next couple of weeks, but a special event happening tonight we'll talk about coming up. Also, President Trump to nominate William Barr, who, by the way, William Barr, he's nominated him as Attorney General, not the first time at Attorney General for Barr. He was Bush 41's Attorney General. We'll talk about that, and also Heather Nauert being named U.S. U.N. Ambassador, and a lot more from Washington. We'll do that with Brendan Kirby coming up at 12:30. Also, joining us at 12:15, we get into a discussion of this week in the markets and what a week it has been, and we'll get Chad Stacy from Stacy Financial on, talk about that and what he sees for next week, and is there any kind of Santa Claus rally left out there? We'll talk about that coming up. But yeah, first let's start with what's most important, and that is getting your shopping done sometime before Christmas Eve, although sometimes we'll keep the door open for you on Christmas Eve like my buddy Angelo's done for me. Hey man.
Hey, how's it going, Sean?
It's going good. Let's talk about what's happening today specifically, and then we'll get in the broader picture of Mobile Bay Coins from now through Christmas for your shopping. But y'all got a special thing happening today.
Yeah, so today in particular, it's Candlelight at the Loop.
Okay.
All the Loop merchants here, you know, on Government Street and on Airport are going to be staying open late. Not everybody, but everybody within the group. So
those that are cool.
Yeah, those that are cool. Those that want to, you know, have some fun and have a good time. So instead of closing the doors at 5 o'clock tonight, we're going to be here from 5 o'clock to 8. Okay. So 9 to 5 and then 5 to 8. We're going to have some stuff out there, have some refreshments. It's going to be a lot of fun. There's going to be trolleys running around. So if you wanted to come by to Mobile Bay Coins, stop and park here, do some shopping, and then check out all the other shops in the area. You don't have to drive all around. Just get on the trolley, have a good time, check out all the other places, come back here and finish up at Mobile Bay Coins. You can probably get all your shopping done in one night.
Yeah, what I like is, you and I were talking about this, I think, on Wednesday, is that for a lot of us with the hours we work, they want to come by, they want to check out the stuff that you and I talk about. They hear us on the radio talking about it,
right.
But they're like,
I'm working.
By the time I work, and then I go drop this off and pick this child up and take them there, whatever, it's after hours.
Exactly, and that's the problem, is so many folks out there, you know, they love listening to the show, they love hearing us and talking to us and checking out things on Facebook, but they can't physically be here.
Right, right.
And so that's the cool thing, is now we have an evening during the week, so it's Friday evening, you're winding down, you can sleep in on Saturday, so
right.
On the way home, stop by Mobile Bay Coins, check out all the cool stuff, and we're going to be here for several hours, and who knows, maybe you want to get wild and crazy and even have dinner out Friday night. I know that's...
Now you're setting me up for trouble.
Well, hopefully your wife's not listening.
Yeah, right. She's probably monitoring right now.
Uh-oh.
2204 Government Street, that's where we are.
Yes, sir.
Right? And so they can come here, like you said, and make this the first stop and the last stop, but the trolley will come by here.
Yes, sir. I think it'll be down there right at the corner next to Dahlia's business, Nature's
okay.
Nuances. She's got the parking lined out there. Like we said, park here, park next door. There's going to be plenty of parking, lots of stuff going on, and we're going to be just having a good old time.
All right. Since I've walked in here, y'all have been busy. I have seen jewelry discussed. I've seen precious metals discussed. I've been discussing Opendel knives with you. So, I mean, what's hot? What's trending?
Everything you just mentioned. As a matter of fact, you got the last the Perry knife or kitchen knife mm-hmm. sets, and somebody else picked up one of the bigger kitchen sets, the cutlery sets. So the Opendels have been really hot and extremely popular. Most people have never heard of the knife, and they're
right.
trying to figure out how to spell it, how to say it. It's
right.
O-P-I-N-E-L. It's a French knife, French design. And as you can attest, you give one out as a gift, and people go, wow, what is this? This is really cool. I've never seen one before. And that, to me, is a huge selling point. When you're gifting something, you want to give something that's unique and different, not the same old,
right.
They've got from 10 other people.
Right. No, you've always talked about that with jewelry items, right, here, with the fine jewelry, but that is actually also true with knives. I mean, it's, you've kind of kept that theme going, whether it be a set of earrings or kitchen cutlery.
Right, or a cool knife, or, you know, a cool pocket knife, cool neck knives. We try to pick things out every year, especially around this time of the year, where you can come by, you can see something that's really cool and different, and again, something you've not seen before. Ron's done the exact same thing with the coin side. We have some really cool bullion pieces, some very cool older coins. Like we talked about last year, we had some of those ancient coins. Ron has some coins from when we were becoming a country, Sean. I'm going to have to show you those later on while you're here.
Were they American?
They were some of the first U.S. silver dollars ever struck. So,
wow.
Pre-1800.
Wow.
Yeah, so that's pretty... Most people don't realize that even though we were becoming a country in 1776, we had no mint,
right,
no rules and regulations on how we're going to start making money, striking coinage. And so that whole process was, Ben Franklin was extremely involved in. He had a lot of interesting things that he did. He wanted us to be on a decimal system, unlike Great Britain.
Yeah.
And so once they finally got everything passed, we had the 1 cent pieces, which actually said 1/100th on the back. So,
oh, wow.
So people knew, hey, this is 1/100th of a dollar. And we have some of those early dollars and some of those early 1 cent pieces here as well.
I didn't know those. See, I mean, you get a history lesson when you come to Mobile Bank
and
Coins.
Economics.
Yes, and economics lesson as well. And we can get in a decimal discussion as well, too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So, okay, so, and one thing, too, when you talk about coins, those are unique in their own right. But y'all also, and I, another thing, since I've been in here, just been here a little bit, I've heard all these things go down, people buying silver rounds and having them engraved as gifts.
That's been extremely popular. Everything from something as simple as the Ten Commandments, an American flag. We have all the military branches in silver rounds. So whether dad was in the Army, right, grandpa was in the Coast Guard, we have all of those things covered. You can have their name, their initials, maybe their enlistment dates and retirement dates.
Oh,
and
good.
So when you customize something by having it engraved, that shows somebody that this was not picked up at Walgreens on Christmas Eve.
Right.
You actually put some thought into this. And that is really, really important because Christmas is going to come and go, but you've got to live with the consequences. That's something I have learned myself over the years. So I've tried to put a little more thought into things and not just do that last minute. Oh, this will be fine. No, we don't do this is fine. We do this is awesome.
Well, okay, yeah, you think about it. If you have something engraved or something like that, that's the gift that they always remember who gave it to them.
Absolutely.
If it's something else, they may say, I got that somewhere. I don't know where I got that.
That's the one where you gift that to somebody, and the next time y'all are out fishing or right, having a beverage or a burger or whatever, they go, did you see what Sean gave me?
Yeah.
And they're going to pass that around to their friends, and they're also going to make sure they get it back.
Yeah, that's right.
So they boast about it, and then every time they do that, you're actually getting extra brownie points.
That's, hey, I'll take it that way. Let's talk about if somebody has, let's say they're buying for grandchildren or something,
right,
like that. They have several children they're buying for. Kind of time frame for if they came in, decided these were the silver rounds they're going with. What's the time frame for turnaround on engraving something?
On engraving, typically it's 24 to 48 hours.
Okay.
The closer we get to Christmas Day,
uh-huh,
that starts to stretch a little bit.
Sure.
And we've had people come in and order 30 different items, mm-hmm, for extended family. And so obviously that puts a kink in things a little bit. That backs us up a little bit. But generally speaking, 24 to 48 hours. Not everything has to be engraved. We have some cool Mickey Mouse, Scrooge McDuck, Darth Vader, Stormtroopers,
so if you know they're
Deadpool,
into that, right.
Yeah, so all these weird pop culture things that are also 1 ounce fine silver pieces, and those are not engravables, but those are true coins in their own right, and an ounce of silver, and sort of collectible and cool. So if you've got those folks in the family, we've got you covered there too.
All right, so what I'm getting at and asking that is if you're thinking about doing that and getting a bunch of the same for, you know, extended family, whatever, come in, tonight would be great, but come
absolutely
in soon and get that done.
Yeah, we've had people come in with their notepad and write down the laundry list of who gets what. It's pretty amazing.
All right. Come out and see us here once again, 2204
Government Street, or you can call us 251-725-1590.
All right. Come on by, too. We'll hook you up with some FM Talk 106.5 goodies. The new run of huggers are in, and I've got them waiting for you right here at Mobile Bay Coins. Coming right back, Chad Stacy joins us from Stacy Financial.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right. Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile. We are live at Mobile Bay Coins on this Friday. Love to see you. 2204 Government Street, right here across from Little Flower. And come on in. We got the new run of FM Talk 106.5 Huggers. We'll hook you up with those. And also, while you're here, check out the Christmas shopping that goes tonight until 8 o'clock, extended hours at Mobile Bay Coins. Good to talk to my buddy Chad Stacey with Stacey Financial. And it's been a heck of a week, Chad. How about that for an understatement?
Yeah, good to hear from you, Sean. Yes, this has been a very volatile week. Kind of similar to what we've been seeing in this market over the last year, really. I mean, you look at where we closed last Friday on the Dow, we're down, you know, I think, over 1,000 points from that mark.
I got to ask you this. I was thinking about you the other day when Tuesday the trading went, the selling was so hot and heavy, and then we had the National Day of Mourning for 41. Does that have any kind of amplifying effect going into what was happening Thursday when they opened up the markets yesterday? Did having a day where they couldn't trade? I know the international indices traded, but here, is that good, bad, indifferent, do you think, in this kind of situation?
Yeah, I think everybody probably has their own opinion about that. My opinion is I think that was probably a good thing, and it was completely, you know, obviously it wasn't planned. I mean, you know, President Bush is one of the greatest Americans of all time, and so good for the markets to close down for his funeral. But I do think it was good because it gave a pause to this volatile trading. And, you know, Sean, you look back at yesterday. You know, there was a point yesterday we were down 700 points on the Dow, and we only closed down about 70 points. So
right.
You talk about some fluctuation. That's a 1,400-point fluctuation if you think about it.
Is that all, Chad, is that all like bargain shoppers like me that saw that drop and said, hey, you know, I've been watching this stock or that stock, and I think this one's at a reasonable price now, I'm going to buy it? Or is there something else afoot?
Yeah, my opinion this last week has mostly to do with what's going on with China. The G20 negotiations between China's leader and Trump last Saturday night was supposed to go well. And however, you know, you go into this week and all of a sudden there's news that the Chinese executive is arrested in Canada, you know, with the big technology
Huawei,
company up
yeah.
there. And, you know, that to me, that's really what started tumbling the market.
Okay, it's always great. If you're just joining us, talking to Chad Stacey with Stacey Financial, and it's like I could talk to this man for days and ask him questions, because that's been my back and forth, like I guess my soliloquy this week has been, I always find the market seems to have things cooked in, be days ahead, if not months ahead. So, you know, I had an issue when I said, okay, that the bulls ran a little bit on Monday off of the news that they had this good meeting between President Trump and Xi Jinping, and then Tuesday, the excuse for all the selling was, well, they didn't believe that the deal would get done. I can't believe the disbelief from Tuesday as much as I can, and I have trouble believing the belief from Monday. You see what I'm saying? That quickly, you could wholeheartedly believe something would be done, and then your whole attitude, just because of a tweet or something, would change on Tuesday.
Yeah, I agree with you, Sean. I mean, I think the volatility in the market is really not called for. In my opinion, it's definitely not being traded based on market fundamentals like it should be. I think it's much more politically driven. These traders have much more of an eye on what's going to happen with, you know, what they call the trade wars, but in particular with China. And I think that, you know, even after a successful meeting, between Trump and Xi Jinping, however you say his name. Even though that was supposedly successful, you can't have a 48-hour turnover of trade all of a sudden just after one meeting
right,
with the leaders.
Right.
But then, you know, you add on top of that the arrest of that Chinese, you know, executive who happens to be, you know, royalty, and now the Chinese are involved in that, and now they're threatening their own, you know, type of retaliation against the U.S. I think that just scares traders in general, Sean. And again, you know, for long-term investors, this kind of thing has always happened between us and other countries, especially China, Russia, people like that. But if you're a long-term investor, you try to kind of you know, look, get into some tunnel vision and try not to react to things like that.
What kind of retaliation could we expect from the Chinese? It wouldn't be that they would hack us or steal our technology secrets or cause an imbalance in the trade ratio, would it? No, they would never do anything like that.
You know, I mean, that's a good point, Sean. That's the very reason that Chinese executive got arrested, because
right.
Not only have they been stealing our intellectual property, but they were already breaking rules with the Iran sanctions. They were selling their product to Iran completely against the law and against the agreements that we had with them. So, you know, again, like you said, China's been doing this for years. They've been stealing our intellectual properties. The retaliation that I have been hearing from sources is that you could expect them to start taking U.S. citizens, you know, possibly as, you know, detaining U.S. citizens over there. I don't want to get too graphic in my language. I don't want to call them
right.
hostages, but, you know, I'm not sure if people know. China already does that. They already engage in retaining U.S. citizens when they're in their country for different purposes. They've done it forever. It's just not, it's normally, it doesn't hit the major media because they don't want to scare Americans.
Now that's going to be at least something we'll be watching for. Chad, let's talk about this. So jobs data today, was that a little bit of a salve here for the rough week in trade? You think that would have been a little decent news, right?
Yeah, I thought so. I mean, I heard the jobs were, about 155,000 jobs created, roughly, and that was actually an underperformance or an underestimate of what they thought was going to be created. And I heard Larry Kudlow talking about it earlier on one of the news channels. You know, Sean, the way I take it is the economy cannot just roll like it has been. It's such a full force. It's going to slow down at different times throughout the year, throughout the economic cycle. I think creating 155,000 jobs was better than going the other way and losing more jobs.
Right. That's kind of what I was getting at.
The unemployment rate rising, if that makes sense to you.
Right. No, I'm with you. I'm on the same page. That's why, even though, you know, it's always a frustration of here's a predicted, and because there's a predicted number, you still have a positive number come out, but it's seen as a negative because it didn't meet the prediction.
That's true. And that's also true for earnings. Every quarter with stocks, when they come out, they predict their earnings. If they're, you know, if they make more than what they predicted, normally you see their stock price rise, and vice versa. If they underperform, you see the stock price drop a little bit. But, you know, I think over time, if you watch a company, if they have positive earnings, regardless of what that particular estimate was, if they continue to move in a positive fashion, their stock price is going to move with the progression of their company, with the growth of their company. So, yeah, my opinion is that sometimes all of these, you know, all of this news that comes out every quarter, all these estimates, the earnings, the jobs reports, they're all, it's good information, but be careful not to get lost in that information every month, you know, every quarter that it comes out. I guess what I'm saying, Sean, is don't let every quarter's, you know, jobs reports and earnings, don't let those numbers, deflect your long-term goals when it comes to investing.
Can you help with like a short, like a Wikipedia version education here for me on the inversion? Yeah, I was listening to some of the discussion this week in rate inversion. I thought they were describing some kind of, motocross move or something like that. I didn't even know what was going on with that.
Well, I mean, typically, you know, when you talk about the interest rate and the inversion between the interest rates that are out there that the federal funds rate basically sets for all of the banks in the country, you know, that also affects bonds and the bond market and bond prices. Typically, in a regular, you know, interest rate cycle, when interest rates go up, long-term bond prices, they suffer. They fall. Right. That's the typical cycle of an interest rate market. This particular, what they when they're calling it some sort of inverse market, and again, I don't want to get too into the weeds on this.
Right, you got to make it simple for a guy like me. Yield curve inversion. I mean, just what does that mean for like regular folks?
Right now, short story, Sean. Right now, it means that as rates have been hiked up the last five or six times, historically, the short-term sector and the floating rate sector would have been very good places for your money to be, but those sectors also got hurt because of this inversion in the interest rate cycle. That's as easy as I can interpret it for you. I think that will correct itself, and it's already started to show in the improvement of those short-term fixed income sectors, and I think it will continue. I think people just need to be patient and let this interest rate cycle work itself. It really needs to work itself out. And I think that's why the federal funds or the Federal Reserve right now is they have kind of a wait and see philosophy. They're not going to rise rates. They want to see a little bit more in what this economy and in the progression and where it's aiming.
Yeah, that's, I guess, the idea of Chairman Powell talk about things being around neutral. Chad, as always, we appreciate your insight on this, and I'm going to be ringing you up next week, probably asking you a whole bunch of these questions again.
That sounds good, Sean. I'm always happy to come on your show. Y'all have a great weekend.
Hey, you too. Chad Stacy with Stacy Financial joining us. Always a fun conversation. Seriously, I could talk to that guy for hours. Another one I could as well, that's Brendan Kirby. He joins us next, a new nominee for Attorney General. We'll talk about it right here on Midday Mobile.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5. Call Sean now at 343-0106.
All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile, live at Mobile Bay Coins on this Friday. Glad to have you here, part of the show. Love for you to come by and see us, 2204 Government Street. What's really cool, too, is the shop staying open until 8 o'clock tonight, special event here in the Loop area. And so if you've heard Angelo and I talking over the years about all the great things at Mobile Bay Coins, but have not been able to get by here because you got to work and do. I get it. Tonight's your night. Stop on in. They'll be open till 8. Plus, you can jump on the trolley, look at all the different shopping options right here around the Loop, and come in and check out whether it be the open L9s we talk about, or those silver rounds, or maybe some of the fine jewelry. There's so many things in here, and they can also take whatever you find and customize it, make it a one of a kind gift for Christmas. So come check it out. Hopefully today while we're here. All right, I want to say hello, and y'all say hello to my buddy Brendan Kirby. Hey, Brendan.
Hey, how you doing, Sean?
Doing good. Speaking of gifts, too, Wicked Mobile available not only on the big Bezos, I mean the big Amazon out there, you can also purchase it in town.
Yeah, you can purchase it. Local bookstores should have it. I should actually check with them to see what their supplies are. If you go into a bookstore and they don't have it, please ask for it so they can order more. And you can get it online. You can go to Arcadia Publishing, which is the publisher, get it direct from the publisher. You can get e-versions of it, print versions, just about everything. We have not yet set up a scenario where I come to your house and read it to you, but perhaps
it's coming soon in 2019. I'm working on that for you. We got so much to talk about here, and I will get to the Kelly thing in a second, but I want to start off with William Barr. President Trump nominating William Barr as Attorney General. Why do I recognize that name?
Yeah, familiar name. He was the Attorney General under George H.W. Bush, so it's kind of nice timing with all the coverage of the father of Bush's death and his career. He's an old hand from that administration. It's a pretty safe choice. He's probably one of the most confirmable nominees that he could have come up with. There shouldn't be an issue about whether he's qualified to do the job since he's already done it. You know, barring some unforeseen controversy or something that we don't know about, he should be confirmed easily.
Okay, yeah, and like you said, he has bipartisan support. Also, though, I got to ask you this: this would be instead of inter-party, this would be intra-party. He was HW's. Is HW's Attorney General. And if you're looking at this Cold War that goes on within the Republican Party, you would have to say some of the players there are the Bush family on one side and President Trump on the other, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. And obviously there's a lot of friction between Trump and the Bush family. It has to do with the 2016 primaries and the very personal campaign that Trump ran against not only Jeb Bush, who was the candidate, but also the other Bushes who had been president. So there was no love lost personally. Having said that, look, when you're a president and you're going to staff an administration with hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of political jobs, there's only there's a limited pool to choose from, and it's every administration, they go back and they look for veterans from the previous administrations of their own party. It's kind of unavoidable. Been very hard for Trump to staff an administration without picking people who had served in the previous Republican administration. And those are both Bushes. So, that's not really a surprise. And, just as people are different all over the place, not all Bush administration veterans are the same. You have really hardcore conservative people, populist, very pro-Trump people that served in that administration. Then you have, more kind of establishment figures that have always kept Trump at arm's length. So, I don't think the fact that he served in the administration is going to be a negative in any way.
Okay, I just, people that have the drain the swamp at all costs, I think sometimes they just cast that net over anybody who has been in Washington in any 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue capacity, that they're they have a pox on their house for the rest of time. And I just wonder if that conversation's been popping up about Barr.
Yeah, again, the problem is, somebody has to do these jobs. In fact, one of the big liabilities of the Trump administration has been that they have not been very good about getting appointees in place. I wrote a story while I was writing for LifeSet a few months ago, taking a look at the pace of this administration staffing up. And outside of judges, where the administration has been very hands-on and aggressive, there are a lot of positions, political appointed positions, that don't have they have an acting person in place because no one permanent has been seated. And, a lot of it is because no one's even been nominated. So, the Senate can't confirm you if you haven't been nominated. So, and part of that, I think, is because Trump has tried to, pick people who weren't tainted by other administrations, or, has avoided people who were critical of Trump, during the primary season. It's hard to come up with enough qualified people to fill these positions if you don't dip into the pool of retreads. Retread is probably an unfair word, but people who have previously served in the administration. You're not going to go back and get Obama and Clinton appointees. And if you don't do that and you don't get the Bush appointees either, who are you left with?
There you go. Okay, let's talk about this. The other name coming out today, although she has been part of this administration now, being nominated as UN Ambassador Heather Nauert. Is it Nauert?
Yeah, I'm not actually sure. I think I've only ever read her name. I'm not sure if Nauert?
Guessing Nauert. Yeah, how about that?
Like that?
Yeah, Nauert. I'm guessing. Yes. So what do you know about her?
It's kind of interesting in that she doesn't have, broad diplomatic experience. She was a Fox News personality, and then now she's been the spokeswoman at the State Department. I guess having said that, though, this job is essentially a communications job. Being the UN ambassador, your primary duty is to communicate the president's message to the rest of the world. So, from that standpoint, who better to do that than someone with a communications background, and someone who has a couple of years of experience now as a spokeswoman and advisor at the State Department. I've seen a lot of criticism of this because there were Fox News connections and the fact that she didn't have the right experience, but I'm not sure what being governor of South Carolina really does, especially specifically to prepare you to be the UN ambassador either. And Nikki Haley did that job and she got pretty high marks. So, that's sort of my thoughts on that.
I don't know, and I'm just playing devil's advocate. I'm not saying I agree with them, but just to play the game, I would say somebody like a Nikki Haley, who is governor, like you said, of South Carolina, it goes through some vetting process, right? You go through the vetting process, not on things of UN level, but vetting process of ability and background and all those kind of things. There's some kind of stress test that's been done on that person, other than, being part of a news gathering network.
Right, and of course, you know, she will go through the same vetting process when she goes to her confirmation hearings, and, you know, those hearings will probably be more important for her than they will be for, say, Barr, who, you know, I think they're just going to go through the motions with him. You know, with her performance in those hearings, you know, might matter, you know, more than the typical nominee, and senators will assess it. But again, I mean, just the politics of it is the president's party controls the Senate. And assuming that this doesn't take place until the new Congress is seated next month, which, you know, I mean, I imagine will be the case, then the majority grows to 53. And, you know, the there's an awful lot of pressure on senators to back the choices of their president. So to get four of them to peel away, it means something pretty substantial probably is going to have to come up. And what usually sinks people when the president controls the party is some sort of scandal arises, and there's a financial scandal, you know, that is uncovered, or some sort of unethical behavior or something like that, you know, or really controversial statements. And barring that, my guess is she'll probably be confirmed.
Okay, saying a controversial statement. Yeah, and I don't think you're going to get that. She has probably been stress-testing the fact that most of her statements would be on record, having been with Fox News. I do want to
there's always the chance that you know, old social media statements or something could crop up.
Are you going to go Kevin Hart on her?
I mean, that's usually what sinks people. I just, you know, and I'm sure there's going to be a lot of criticism that she's not qualified because, you know, she doesn't have diplomatic background, or she hasn't been elected, you know, in elective office or something like that. I'm just not sure if that alone it will be sufficient to kill it off. Because, you know, it would require, you know, not just one or two, but four Republicans, you know, would have to peel up. And that's assuming every Democrat would vote against her. And I wouldn't say that's a given either.
I don't think they're going to peel off. I think she's confirmed. I think here's a problem. You'd be naive in not thinking what this looks like. Once again, I don't think this means she's not capable of the job, but you can easily play the game that, hey, is it just let's take everybody who's not working at Fox News and we're going to put them as part of the administration.
I mean, it would be...
I don't know if it's fair, but I mean, that's...
It's not like she's going just from Fox News. It's like calling John Bolton, you know, a Fox News, you know, talking head, because he worked for Fox News.
Or Kudlow or any of the,
you know, years and years
TV.
Of experience in the government. You know, I fully understand why you know, people would be leery of this choice, and I'm sure if the shoe were on the other foot and, you know, a Democratic administration was nominating someone who, you know, had spent a career at CNN and had a couple of years in a public information role, you'd see the same criticism from the other side.
Yep. Yeah, I want to make sure that everybody realizes they, you know, make sure you have your hypocrite meter on when you do all this stuff. Okay, we're going to run to the break, and we come back. I want to talk about John Kelly, what's happening with this, and bring us up to date. Also, you talk about challenges the president might have within his own party in the Senate. This Khashoggi killing thing, I mean, we've got what I see as disparate Republican senators like a Rand Paul and a Lindsey Graham. Coming from different places, but arriving at the same idea. We'll come back more with Brendan Kirby right here on Midday Mobile, live from Mobile Bay Coins. Special hours tonight, too, open till 8 o'clock. We'll talk more about that when we get back. Love to see you out here, 2204 Government Street. See us today, and come by and get one of the FM Talk 106.5 huggers. A new run, they're here.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile, Friday style. Glad to have you along for this afternoon and this evening. Extended hours at Mobile Bay Coins. They're going to be open till 8 o'clock tonight. Your chance to come out here tonight and not only check out what's going on at Mobile Bay Coins, you can catch a trolley, go check out the other Loop businesses special event going on tonight. We'll talk about that with Angelo a little bit more coming up in just a few. Continue our conversation with Brendan Kirby. Of course, Life Set writer at one point, now running his own show. Tell folks where they go, because your take on politics is a unique one for sure, and it has one that, well, I say unique because you know so much about history, like you put things in context and teach us a lesson. If they want to go get your writing now, where do they go?
Yeah, sure. Go to KirbyOnPolitics.com. Pretty easy site to remember, and you can look once you get on the homepage for Kirby's Take, and I write about, you know, news and current events. The latest up there is looking at the latest border crossing numbers along the southwest border by illegal immigrants. We hit an all-time record in the number of families crossing the border illegally. And it's pushed the overall numbers up to the highest of the Trump presidency.
Wow. And that's with, you said families. Is the semantic of that important, the saying families, because has there been
in
the past?
It's adults and children traveling together. So, you know, a lot of times it's their actual family. It's, you know, parents and children, but it could be an uncle and a nephew, or in some cases just adults with a kid that they know, or right. or in extreme cases that they snatched. In hopes of getting through this loophole in American immigration law. So what the government calls them family units, and that would be children and adults who are traveling together. And this used to be a very tiny percentage of the illegal immigrants that would come across the border. Now it is, in the first 2 months of this current fiscal year, that group is about half of all illegal immigrants coming across the border. And the reason is quite simple. People in foreign countries have recognized and realized that if you come alone and you're caught, you can be detained and then deported. But if you have a child with you, you're going to be released pending the outcome of an asylum claim if you make it. And in many cases, once you get released, you never end up going back home. And so it's this big loophole. Congress could close it. Only Congress can close it, though. There's not really much the administration can do about that. And that's why these numbers are surging, because people respond to incentives, and they figured out, the best way to come and stay.
Okay, I guess it'd be interesting at some point when you say this number for families. I guess why I was hung up on the family part of it is, has there been any comparison to the raw number of foreign nationals trying to get into our country, however they're grouped? You know what I'm saying? Even, let's say, the individual numbers versus family numbers, the number of people trying to get in, is that number also higher, or is it just...
The total number of people coming in, it's up over what it was last year.
Okay.
And it's higher than it's been kind of the average of the last few years. Now, overall, the numbers are way down compared to what they were 10, okay. 20 years ago when you had large numbers of Mexicans coming in. In recent years, the flow of people back and forth from Mexico has stabilized. The Mexican economy is getting bigger. Mexicans are having smaller families than they used to. So we don't get as many Mexicans crossing illegally as we once did. And they're being replaced now by Central Americans. The share of our illegal immigration flow from Central America is way up. So overall, the numbers are down, compared to what they were 20 years ago, 10 years ago. But they're going back up over what they were last year, and it's being driven by this family-based migration, these parents and children that are coming. It depends on how you look at it, right? And it depends on what your metric is and what you're concerned about. If you take a look at the overall numbers and you say, hey, this isn't a crisis, it's way less than it was a decade ago, then you have a good basis to make that argument. If you say, hey, look, if you're Trump and you say, I came to office promising to stop illegal immigration, and it's up substantially over my first year in office, and it's up because of this loophole, then you would look at that and say, we're failing here, and I'm not delivering my campaign promise, and things are getting worse, compared to his first year in office. So this is the thing about statistics and problems. It sort of depends on what your framing is and how you look at them.
I'm still stuck on that enforcing the laws of the country thing, so I haven't changed on that. I just want to make sure that everything stays in context. All right, we just got a couple minutes here left. So Mueller investigation questioning John Kelly, Chief of Staff John Kelly. What's going on with this today?
The reports are that Mueller is asking John Kelly about this obstruction of justice issue, which really isn't new or surprising. I mean, we've seen reports like this for months, that this obstruction of justice angle is something that Mueller was interested in, when Trump fired James Comey, that was somehow an obstruction of justice or an attempt to obstruct justice. So the chief of staff would be someone you would talk to try and get an idea of what Trump's mindset was when he did that and what his intent was.
You know, I still think that just from the raw politics of this is if Mueller ends his investigation and says we didn't find any proof that the Trump campaign participated in an election conspiracy, but oh, by the way, look, he fired James Comey, and we think that's an obstruction of justice. I just don't think that that is going to be something that will get 20 Republican senators to vote to remove him from office if he's impeached. And I'm not expressing an opinion about whether it should be or shouldn't be. I'm just saying that I don't think that, you know, because an impeachment is a political process. And the politics of it are, you, in order to remove a president, you need a supermajority in the Senate. And that means you need a lot of Republican senators to say, you know what, this is a high crime and misdemeanor. And I just don't think firing James Comey is going to be it.
Yeah, I always appreciate you saying that, and for the reason of people understanding, once again, impeachment is a political and not a legal process, because I hear things thrown around like, well, this evidence and that evidence. It only has to be the evidence to sway enough constituents out there to get in the ear of their representatives for Republicans that matters. It doesn't, and nothing else matters on that.
Right, and the Constitution, if you go read the Constitution, what it has to say about impeachment, it's surprisingly little. It doesn't lay out any kind of details about, you know, how this should go, other than it says that the Chief Justice is supposed to preside over the proceedings, but it doesn't talk about what the rules of evidence should be, or the burden of proof. You know, should evidence be treated like it is in a court of law, or more like it is in a congressional hearing? You know, all this stuff is just sort of left up to the actors of the time to kind of figure out for themselves and make up. Now, since we had an impeachment trial in the Clinton presidency, I'm sure if it came to that, you know, they would use that as a guide. But there's not really any specificity in the Constitution about how to do that, which is kind of interesting. And it also doesn't have, you know, I see people referring to various criminal statutes. You know, a violation of the law doesn't necessarily meet the definition of high crime and misdemeanor, and you don't need a violation of a specific statute to reach that either. I mean, you can have a political crime.
Right.
You know, the Senate could decide. You know, when we had our last impeachment before Clinton, that was a political crime. I mean, it was over whether or not President Johnson could fire his Secretary of War. Wasn't a bribery, you know, thing or right. Collusion or something like that. It was, you know, sort of a exercise of your official duties kind of thing. So it's, you know, it doesn't necessarily have to be a crime, and, you know, not all crimes, you know, fit the bill either. So it's very, very murky. But, you know, again, I just, in order to do it, you know, the senators voting on it are not randomly drawn in a jury pool and people that have no stake in it. They've got a very big political stake in it. And if their constituents don't want the president removed, they're probably not going to vote to remove him.
There he is, Brendan Kirby. I appreciate your time as always. Remember the book, y'all, Wicked Mobile, for sale now. Makes a great Christmas gift. And you know what? You can probably pick one up today, I would imagine. That's for sure. Our Brendan, we're going to talk next week more about this. All right?
Thanks a lot.
All right, coming right back. We are live at Mobile Bay Coins. This is Midday Mobile. Also coming up next hour, Dalton just rolled in here. 6.5 Stories is on the way.